Geltenborn edits the news.
Good evening, everybody. This has been another memorable day in the history of the Second World War. Adolf Hitler has made another pronouncement, and the world tonight is weighing that pronouncement and asking itself what it really meant, what the chances are that it may lead to peace. Those chances, as I venture to say this morning after listening to the talk, are slight, and all the reaction that I have seen indicates that they continue to be slight. I spent a good part of today in rereading the speech in English translation, in listening to it again from a recording here in Louisville in the studios of station WHAS, and also in thinking over some of the implications of what Hitler said. And one thing has occurred to me, that Hitler might have said certain things that he did not say, which would have changed the picture completely. For example, suppose that Hitler had said this, and it's conceivable that he might or could have done so: if my personal leadership proves to be an obstacle to peace, I am so devoted to the cause of peace that I am willing to resign my personal leadership of the German people and to give it into the hands of my good comrade, Field Marshal Goering. That could easily have been said by Adolf Hitler. He did not say it. If he had said it, it would have given the British government and the French government some response to their demand that there be a change in German administration. It might have made possible some negotiation. Hitler might also have said this: if France and Britain are unwilling to trust me, perhaps they are willing to trust Benito Mussolini, the great leader of Italy, a state that has been friendly to Germany. If they are willing to trust Mussolini, I am perfectly willing to accept an armistice on such terms as he will agree in consultation with us, with Britain, and with France. That too, Adolf Hitler might have said, and if he had said it, in view of what we now know about Mussolini's eagerness for peace, we might then have had the hope that Mussolini would be able to repeat what he succeeded in doing at Munich, bring the two sides together and work out a settlement. Of course, I must add at once, it would probably have had to be a somewhat different settlement from the one that was reached at Munich. Hitler might also have said this: I am willing to submit the fate of the Poles and the Czechs to a Congress of all interested powers. Germany does not wish to annex alien races. Germany is interested only in the incorporation of Germans. And if a Congress of all interested nations, including, of course, Germany and Russia, Italy, France and Britain, yes, and even some representatives of the Poles and the Czechs, we are willing to work out a solution of their problems, because their problems at the moment are our problems. That too, Hitler might have said, and if he had said it again, there would have been a real basis for peace discussions. I mention these things to indicate how far away Adolf Hitler was from making an address that really promises a constructive peace basis. You heard from Mr. Shirer in Berlin this morning that he felt that Hitler was more calm, more confident, less emotional than he had been on previous occasions. Well, I felt, too, the more quiet and the more serious note, but I'm not so sure that I would call him more calm than he has been before. There were high emotional passages in the speech. Of course, the utter seriousness of the situation which Germany confronts today would naturally create a somewhat different psychological atmosphere. And as you remember, Mr. Shirer told us about that. The greater quiet that he observed among the members of the Reichstag, their less frequent applause, and their very earnest and prolonged applause when Hitler made his direct appeal for peace with France. But what is the reaction that has come to us so far to this address of the German Chancellor? The British Ministry of Information announces that the speech is vague and obscure, shot through with falsehoods, that Hitler will have to offer more than verbal assurances if the British and French are to lay down their arms. Hitler says, "We await the enemy in the West." And the British answer, "Let him wait," which indicates that they feel that they can afford to do the waiting better than he can. In Paris, Premier Daladier says, "A war has been imposed upon us. We must fight it through to victory, which alone will permit Europe to reestablish a regime of real justice and lasting peace." And the Paris press tonight quotes Daladier's statement to the Foreign Commission of the Chamber of Deputies of a few days ago, in which he said, "We do not want another truce between two aggressions." Italy's reaction is extremely interesting. Italy has been very quiet with reference to the whole situation since Count Ciano returned from his very hurried and not much publicized visit to Berlin. Not much publicized in Rome, much more generously publicized in Berlin. And is it not possible that when Count Ciano reached Berlin and Hitler's proposed peace terms were submitted to him, that he indicated that they were not such as could be handled by Benito Mussolini? And tonight in Rome, there seems general relief that Adolf Hitler in no sense called upon his good friend Benito Mussolini to handle the very thorny and difficult peace negotiations. In Moscow, Soviet political circles find Adolf Hitler's peace offer clear and precise, and in keeping with the Russo-German pact. They make special mention in Moscow of those passages in which Hitler discussed the reorganization of Eastern Europe in cooperation between the German and the Russian governments. But there also is a curious lack in Hitler's address. No precise statement as to any agreement between Russia and Germany as to exactly what is to be done, either in the Baltic or in the Balkans. And we have the right to conclude that if there had been some clear, definite, precise understanding, that he might have mentioned it in this important address. Turkish reaction is significant. It is the announcement that Britain and Turkey have initialed a mutual assistance pact which will make Turkey neutral even if Britain fights Russia. That is significant, for thus far, Turkey's only close tie has been with Soviet Russia. And this new treaty between Britain and Turkey also obligates Turkey to fight on the side of the Allies if Italy helps Hitler. And curiously enough, the Rome radio tonight, according to a bulletin which has just come in, announces and confirms these terms, indicating that Italy is not dissatisfied with them. Japan's reaction, the summoning of her ambassador back to Tokyo from Berlin. She chooses this day to recall him. He had advocated a Japanese-German-Italian military alliance, and Japan takes this occasion to indicate her displeasure in that advocacy, a displeasure that naturally has received accentuation since Germany has turned toward Soviet Russia. In the Balkans, there is an interesting reaction. It's one of disappointment. It's felt in various Balkan states that Adolf Hitler did not make any new proposals that could serve as a basis for peace. Hungary was pleased by the vague allusion to German-Hungarian friendship, but was concerned over Hitler's proposed transfer of minorities in southeastern Europe. And just what does that resettlement mean? Berlin tonight indicates that Nazi observers think it may be the forerunner of a German move to bring nearly 2.5 million Germans into the Reich. In other words, that phrase in Hitler's address was an element of new disturbance rather than an element of appeasement, of peaceful settlement. Hitler's failure to mention Romania is interpreted in some quarters as a German admission that King Carol's country is in the Soviet, not in the German sphere of influence. And so it's obvious that nowhere has there been precisely favorable reaction to what Adolf Hitler has said. And in most quarters, his speech is not considered a contribution to peace. Good evening.